Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie, back after a break. Actually, like, after doing this podcast basically intermittently for the last couple of months, I'm back. Jacob is here, too. How's it going?
Pretty good.
And we're joined by a special guest. We've had him on the show once before. We're really excited to have him back for a live show. We've got a live chat room going, and we've got some Twitter questions, and then we'll take questions from the chat. You know how this works, but we're really happy to have one of our favorite writers on Anime News. All of the writers are our favorites, but we love this guy. He does right now. He is writing up. Remind me, you were writing up
Lost Village,
Kisniver.
And Flying Witch.
Flying Witch, yeah. As I look at the schedule, I'm like, right, it's those three. Nicholas Creamer is here. You can find his stuff at wrongeverytime.com. And, of course, Anime News Network. Nick, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Very happy to be here.
All hey, right.
Everybody out there.
So, I watched a whole bunch of The Lost Village. So, this is going to be good, because you're reviewing it.
And oh, yeah. I'm reviewing the hell out of it.
You have a controversial stance on this show, I think. I think it's fair to describe it as controversial. Jacob, what do you think?
I would say
it's inherently a very, very divisive show, so it's sort of hard to avoid having a controversial stance. But yes, I definitely probably have possibly the minority opinion among anime viewers on the show.
Well, that's exciting. I want to get into it. we have a little bit of podcast business to get to first. I just need to get this out. The show has been intermittent, and one of the things that has been happening to me is that my duties at the site have increased again by about fivefold or so. That happens every 3 or 4 years. And now I am handling this webcomic that we have coming up called Vice and Luna. We just started up a contributor program, that's in addition to everything I was already doing for the site. The podcast is usually the first thing to kind of suffer whenever I had too many other things to do. And so the thing is, I really want to keep doing Ancast, but the reason I couldn't really keep doing it at the pace I wanted to was because interviews take a really long time to set up. I have to come up with the guest. I need to reach out to that guest. I have to schedule the guest. I have to research and prepare for the interview. You know, having to do a series review every single month. Also, I may not have time for that, you know, to watch 26 episodes of something or whatever. Anyway, all that stuff aside, I wanted to change the timing of Ancast and the format yet again to something that I could actually produce every week. So you're actually listening to the first episode of what Ancast will largely be moving forward. Will be this. We will do this format. I'm going to watch anime every single week. I'm going to keep up with it for this show. I'm not going to just wait till the end of the season to watch stuff. I'm going to keep up with things for this podcast. Jacob and I will record Thursday afternoons with a guest from the site or a friend of mine from the industry or another blogger that we like, you know, from around the internet or something. Just one of our friends will come on and talk about that week, and then we'll take questions from the chat and questions from Twitter. And the idea is to just do that most of the time. And then we will still have interviews and still have, like, super nerds and occasionally do the other shows that we did. But largely, Ancast will be this, because this is what I can make every week without breaking a sweat. And you'll get the show every week instead of getting it once a month or whatever, and I can actually produce it. Anyway, let's go ahead and get back to the regular thing. Hopefully people are cool with that. I'm excited about it. I really want to do things that way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm already watching all this crap anyway, so you know, it gives me plenty of license to talk about.
Hey, it's not, you don't watch that much crap.
No, I watch the stuff that I genuinely enjoy watching, but some of it is crap.
Some of it. Only a few things.
Some of it is crap.
Only a few things are crap.
I watch good crap as well as bad crap.
Yeah, right.
Anyway. I'm impressed by how much you're able to watch, Jacob. I think you watch like 3 times as much as I do in a season.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I watch, the way I get it done is I watch it with food. It's like, oh, it's lunchtime, and I will have this on while I eat.
Yeah, 2.5 hour lunch. Yeah.
No. Not, I mean, you know, you space it out, and you get a week behind on a couple things and stuff like that.
I don't get it. Obviously, don't get anywhere near your level of consumption. What are you sitting at, Nick? Like, both for ANN and for just personal and for your blog, like, how much do you consume in a week?
Right now, I'm watching about half a dozen airing shows, which is actually a lot for me. Like, normally I'll watch what I'm watching for ANN and, like, maybe one or two other shows. And then I'm also probably watching, like, maybe 5 episodes a week of other stuff for the blog, just, like, older shows. Like, I'm watching Planets right now, for example.
Right. So you sort of kind of keep a mix going.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, and
but
so
normally there's only like 3 or 4 shows in a given season that I, like, feel like I need. Like, it's event television for me that I need to keep up with.
3 or 4 shows in a season feeling like event television is pretty good.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
That's yeah.
That's why I enjoy anime.
That's pretty good. So, of the stuff that you're reviewing this season so far, what's the best? What so far is, like, the most impressive?
Of the 3 I'm reviewing for Anne right now?
Yeah, for us so far.
That itself is, like, a tricky question, because I feel Flying Witch is the most, like, reliably good by conventional metrics. Kiznaiver is the one with the highest potential ceiling for how good it can be, and The Lost Village is, like, a masterpiece of intentionally bad writing and direction. So yeah. They're all great in very different, or potentially great in different directions.
So you see potential greatness in all 3.
I see potential greatness in Kiznaiver. I think the other 2 are legitimately very good at what they do.
Really? Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, we'll get to The Lost Village. I'm really excited to talk about it, but before we do that, Jacob, do you want to, like, catch us up on was anything great from the last couple of weeks?
Oh, I mean, of stuff that's surprising that people are not already talking, like, everybody's already watching, Academia and Cabinary are the big, like, populist numbers kind of shows this season, so people are already watching those and you don't really have to be told. I the 2 most surprising things that maybe if you're not paying attention to, it's almost at the end, and it's going to be 39 episodes total, so, you know, maybe whatever, if you haven't already gotten into it or it's not your thing, but Ushio and Tora, the MAPPA anime based on the old fucking 90s shonen thing, is reaching its end, and it really is, like, on full showstopper blitz. Like, it looks and feels exactly like Berserk or Yu Yu Hakusho or a lot of those, like, turn of the decade sort of, like, shonen when shonen was a little uglier and less polished than it is now, like pre-Eva, like, shonen manga that was kind of, like, rough and ugly. Like, it's really indulging that so completely that it feels like no other show that gets made today in the aesthetic and the timing, the pacing and the coloring and everything like that, except it doesn't look cheap. Like, those shows looked cheap. This is, like, immaculately well animated and stuff like that. So if you miss that aesthetic, like, Ushio and Tora is the very best of that aesthetic. And the story's pretty good, too. Like, I can see why this manga was still remembered, why it's considered kind of a classic, mostly because of the villain. The main villain of that show is absurdly frightening, like, just very in-your-face scary. And, yeah, so, I mean, like, if you like that aesthetic, if you like that brr, gritty, bloody, sort of nasty monsters and yokai sort of manga aesthetic, you should be watching Ushio and Tora, because it's really good. The other thing is a surprise is the show that I completely wrote off at the beginning, but has since become, like, weirdly great and hilarious, Tanaka-kun is Always Listless.
Oh, right, so we were asked to start reviewing this.
Yeah, and, well, it started off on the wrong foot because all the jokes in the first episode are just about the titular Tanaka-kun and the guy who carries him from classroom to classroom because he just can't be bothered. That's the I would if I had to, like, come up with a better title, I'd probably Tanaka-kun can't be bothered or something, because that's his character. It's just like, what's the most expedient way I can approach this activity without exerting any energy whatsoever? And so that's cute at first, but, like, you couldn't watch a whole show of that. So they brought in other characters, and the ensemble cast is what's made that show, like, really lovable to a lot of people now. Like, and I think in our episode rankings, there's a lot of people voting on it, and a lot of people really love it. Like, So that was surprising. I wasn't expecting to like that show as much as I do, but it's just a comedy. Like, it's just a cute little comedy that's mostly aimed at the Fujoshi subset, but it is, it's done the right way, I guess. Like, it's actually funny and charming and unique, and yeah, I was really surprised by how much I liked that show after it got past its, like, seemingly limited first episode.
Right. Yeah. Well, Rebecca Silverman picked it up. Mm-hmm. And now, so she just turned in like the first like six or something like that. And I don't know. Like, I watched the first one and was super bored. Right. So I don't know if it's going to.
It's mostly a girly thing. Like, it's mostly a. There's guys that like it. Like, there's a lot of guys in my, like, Anna Twitter bubble and stuff like that like it. But it is. I don't know. It's just an aesthetic. It is just an aesthetic. Either you find it cute and funny or you don't. But it's very homoerotic, both on the male and female side. Like, there's a lot of yuri-ish jokes and yaoi-ish jokes. And it's just cute. It kind of has a similar tone to My Love Story, where it's just, you know, there's no pretense. There's no, like, cliches. It's just, oh, this is a charming, cute way to go about this. And it's pretty well animated, too. Like, there's some nice sakuga in it. So, you know.
I watched, like, the first four My Hero Academia. Mm-hmm. And, I thought it was competently executed, A-OK. I mean, I'm glad it's super popular. I did not feel a thing. I mean, it's neat, I guess. I didn't have much of a reaction to it. Is that normal?
I mean, kind of. It's a little generic for me as well, but it's... I enjoy and respect its art. At first I was a little iffy on the art style, but it works really well for Bones animation. There's some really good looking sequences in that show. It's good eye candy. It's very easy to watch. As far as like personal attachment, not deeply, no, but it is just a shonen thing. I have a lot of respect for its constancy of tone. It doesn't go like a lot of shonen stuff, like your Naruto's and your Naruto alikes and stuff like that go off into like, oh, that's gross. Oh, that's stupid. Or that's cliche. My Hero Academia doesn't do that. It kind of has that pristine, like, perfect, family-friendly, everyone is just likable, and this is kind of a nice, compelling conflict, and everybody can kind of get behind this message feeling.
Yeah, it's a very polished execution of, like, the sort of shonen fundamentals there. Right. And I actually like the likableness of its cast a lot. Like, I like that they're, like, you know, competent, kind people who actually care about what they're doing and, like, genuinely enjoy Joe's company.
Really likable in it. And so yeah, like, I can't attach to it super closely just because it's kind of simple. Like, it's just kind of all-ages fair, but I respect that it's not like it never feels like lame or kind of you don't need to add any caveats to it. It's like, oh, anybody can watch this and get it.
Yeah, totally.
There's no
absolutely
caveats. It's just
fun. And I agree with that 100%. I was just like, yeah, all right, cool. What else is on? A little bit. Like, I watched four of them. I was like, yeah, all right, I get it.
I mean, it's tough for me to separate my feelings from the show and my feelings from the manga because, like, the manga, it is what they've adapted. They've adapted extremely closely. But it both, like, continues to iterate on itself in interesting ways. And also, the anime adaptation speed is just really slow. They're doing, like, one chapter an episode.
Yeah, I started laughing at how obvious it was that they were doing one chapter an episode.
Yeah.
Like, it's the episode breaks are absurd. Like, no, mm-hmm. just tell us. No, just keep...
Just get to the...
Oh, jeez. Like, yeah, like... I mean, I get it. Like, they don't have much manga to adapt, and they want this to last a while or whatever, but...
Yeah, I sort of find it interesting that they're, like, doing this sort of split core eternal shonen thing as opposed to just going into filler or anything. But it doesn't make for the most gripping episode-to-episode watch.
Well, I mean, they're going to try a bunch of different ways to keep making these things, right? I mean, so
yeah,
this is the
slow way. Yeah, and they don't
have that
many more hits to, like, rely on at this point. They just don't have that much to replace the old big shonen hits.
It just really seems weird to me because it's the kind of show, content-wise, in terms of, like, story, writing, characters, it's the kind of thing I would expect to be a million episodes long and poorly animated. So it's weird to be like, oh, this is one core, and it's animated to hell and back. And it's like, that's not what I'm used to from this kind of story, but that's absolutely the kind of, like, this is straight up, like, One Piece, except it's about superheroes, not pirates, and it's pretty and not, you know, shabby looking, so...
I mean, the shonen fundamentals can result in very entertaining stories. Like, that's why these things keep being made. And if something is in that shell and is done well consistently, like Hunter x Hunter, for example, then I'll happily watch it. It's just that normally the pacing and the production necessities make it unwatchable, so I don't.
Yeah, but I think like One Piece, like, this is the most, like, no caveats, no slip-ups, no aspects to it. It's just very tone. It's very tone consistent. It's very, like, yes, I know it wasn't workshopped. Like, it's one mangaka and his editor or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's one of those things that feels workshopped, where it's like, okay, we rounded off all the rough edges on this, and this is just good quality family entertainment. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally, and I do like the feeling that it's like, oh, I could just recommend this to literally anyone,
right?
And they would get it. And I also like the fact that between this and JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, it feels like all the really loud design choices from the 90s that I I like to see them recontextualized, because they looked ugly as hell back then, but recontextualized in a pop art way, they look pretty cool. Right. So I'm kind of happy those colors are kind of coming back. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. we're seeing them used in new ways. And when you hear it, Academia looks very 90s to me. Mm-hmm. Just the color palette.
Yeah.
And that's cool. So it's a really good, it's a great show to look at. And they are occasionally animating the shit out of it. So,
yeah. I think with JoJo's, it's especially weird because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that part of JoJo's was technically written in the 80s or the like real early 90s. So before that color aesthetic was really... before the thing you associate with the 90s had happened yet, but the anime is being made now, and the setting is 1999, so they make it look more like 1999, but it was written about the future.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, so it's a weird confluence of
I mean, I think you have to give some of the credit there to the new director. The director is just knocking it out of the park, I think, every week.
Yeah, all right. Okay, so I guess that means we should talk about the other thing I watched was Flying Witch, which I had not even gotten to the first episode yet. And it was good. That seemed like an Inuyasha that I would actually watch that for its intended purpose, which is to relax and feel a little zen mm-hmm. with the world. Like, I've only recently started to embrace the idea of Inuyasha is like, oh, you're this is like a therapeutic exercise. It's not really a TV show. Like, it is, but it's really more of a therapeutic exercise. Like, personally, I don't mean, like, in terms of my job or anything. So, like, I've seen a few Inuyasha now, just with that mindset, and I'm kind of getting it now. I feel like I kind of get it now. And Flying Witch felt like it was substantive enough to make me kind of interested, but also had that Zen Inuyasha thing going on that I was just now sort of starting to appreciate. So I don't know if I'll watch the rest of it. I feel like those shows are like, I have to absolutely be like in that mood. Mm-hmm. Like, totally.
Yeah,
it's not like a week to week thing.
You're in the mood for calming down. You take an episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so like watching something like that week to week seems weird. Because I guess I don't feel like that once a week where I need that kind of come down.
Right, yeah.
I don't know.
I like it more than... I mean, I wouldn't say that I need that quote-unquote come down week to week either, but I attached to the characters and the aesthetic in Flying Witch, and I just kind of genuinely wanted to... It's more... To me, it's more like a restaurant or a corner store that you visit once a week. So
yeah,
that's
sure.
more like why I'm drawn to it. Is I don't necessarily need to...
That's a good way to think about it, yeah.
Yeah, I don't necessarily need the therapy session, but it's like, oh, well, I like this place. Like, I like the aesthetic of this mountain town that they have and these, like, nice characters that don't feel like... They don't feel like they belong on body pillows. They feel like actual, like, nice ladies that live in the mountains and not, you know... Nice ladies that live in the mountains, and wouldn't you like it on a body pillow? You know, which is new. Like, that's not common for Inuyasha type stuff. So, yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, like I said, I don't think I'm going to watch it, like, you know, week to week or anything. But I feel like the next time I get stressed out, I think I might say, like, you know what? I think I'm going to watch a little Flying Witch. And totally the music is what did it for me on that show.
Yeah.
It's a little cliche. Like, it's exactly what you'd expect. But I feel like it's pretty well executed. The music's really nice.
It's full. It's an orchestra.
It's pretty diverse, too.
Yeah.
A pretty broad soundtrack.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, like, a lot of those shows kind of have the bleepy bloopy, like...
Yeah.
Here's a couple
of instruments.
Yeah,
this one's got some nice acoustic guitar. This one's got some
horn
instruments there and there.
Like, there's a horn section.
Right.
It's like, oh, woodwinds.
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I recommend checking out Flying Witch if you're in the mood for Inuyasha. Yeah. Okay, so we got to talk about The Lost Village. So I hadn't gotten a chance to watch a lot of anime because I've just been writing comics. So this week I was like, okay, I'm going to watch anime. And I really wanted to watch The Lost Village because everybody has been talking about it as So Bad It's Good. And I love So Bad It's Good. And I watched the first episode of a preview guide, and it certainly seemed So Bad It's Good to me. Mm-hmm. After 7 episodes, I maintain The Lost Village is So Bad It's Good. Mm-hmm. So, Nick, I want to know, what is your hypothesis on this show? I want to know what I'm supposed to get my head around here.
It's very strange to me because not that like this kind of show would exist at all, but it's just that in anime, I very rarely see this kind of sense of humor.
Okay.
It seems so well crafted to be this So Bad It's Good thing in that like the direction actually shifts between looking so incompetent it must be a student film to like actually being really urgent for one of the more energetic scenes. And like the writing seems self-aware, and they actually like build many inside jokes that aren't actually drawn to themselves as inside jokes or in the way anime so often draws attention to its own humor. Mm-hmm. It's just like there's bigger things like, oh, the giant boob, or oh, Love Pond being ridiculous, or throwing up on a guy repeatedly across multiple episodes. Those are like easy jokes you can point to, but it also just seems like the whole script is written in a way that's sort of digging at its own genre in a way that I find a lot more subtle than I normally see in anime comedy, and more like something you'd see in like Mr. Show or what The Room accidentally creates. And I think it's fantastic. I think it's really good at that. That's much more my style of humor, that sort of structural digging at like what kind of show this is and having fun with the bounds of the genre and what you expect of the characters and whatnot in that sort of situation. And I think it's killing it. I think the direction and the writing is killing it. And I continually wait for it to mess up somehow and stop being very good at that exact tone, because it's not an easy thing to unintentionally do. Like, there could be an episode where they go too heavily into one character's backstory in a way that's actually believable and grounds it in a way that makes it less funny in the other way or whatnot. But it just keeps hitting that note very well, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. I agree. I think I feel like I can totally follow you down that road. I get what you're saying. For me, I feel like, all right, so I guess running down what happens in The Lost Village is kind of tough to do, but
yeah,
basically a bunch of panicky assholes are on a bus heading for a village, a tour of a village,
yep,
where they can start again. Their old lives will be wiped away, and they'll be given a new life in this new village. Nothing else is explained.
Yep.
About that, in terms of who told them about this village, how they all found, like, how they all came to get on the bus.
Doesn't make any sense.
Why would they call it a tour if they're going there to, like, they're not touring the village.
Yeah, they are.
They're going there to live, right?
Yeah, they already supposedly sent suicide.
They're somehow the 30 of them going to create a new life in this abandoned village that will be good.
But is the idea that they're going to create this new life together, or they're all going
to
be
supposed to make, like, a commune?
But so then why would the idea be to just get random strangers? Wouldn't you want to find like people who could work together and like, I'm just going to meet these 30 people who I'm going to live the rest of my life with? What?
Yep. It's just people who want to, it's like 30 random forumites got stuck in this village together.
But that's such a weird, that's not like understandable. Everyone would want it. Sometimes you just want to get away from your life and become a different person. Not sometimes you want to get away from your life and become a different person, specifically in a commune situation with 30 strangers that you then have to get along with, like you're on a reality TV show.
Yeah, 30 strange assholes from the
internet. What? Why would anyone sign up for that?
Right.
Yep.
Well, the answer
without
is,
knowing who else is going to be on the bus.
The answer is the people who signed up for it are like one character trait loathable, like miscreants.
All nonsensicals.
They're all misanthropes, judgmental, hateful misanthopes.
None of them can pay attention to what they actually should be paying attention to for more than like half a sentence at a time before something else distracts them that someone else said, and then they start on a different conversation that makes no sense.
I'm sorry, there was a bunch of crosstalk at the beginning of that. Nick, can you start that over again? I'm sorry about that.
like in I think it was episode 4 or 5, they have a discussion when they all get back to the village about what they should do now, because you know the one girl saw a giant Mitsumune and someone else, and they also the killer is on the loose, and then yet they somehow but within 3 sentences get derailed into a talk about what Hyoketsu no Judgeness's actual name is, and that's just like the mind state they're all in permanently. They just cannot keep a train of thought going aside from Love Pond, who always has one very specific thing on her mind.
Which is to kill somebody.
Yes,
execute. For some reason that hasn't been established. But it's not even just her. Like
No, they established it.
Huh?
Yeah, they established it, but it was stealing.
It was bullshit, edgelord. Yeah. I was like, am I watching Big Order all of a sudden? Like,
right, well, yeah. Well, her
this
one
is like Future Diary up in here.
It is. Her one character trait is that she wants to kill somebody, specifically execute. So she wants to find somebody who deserves to be killed and then kill them. But it's not like she's the only one who does this, because before anybody is even found dead, and the one person who is found dead, is not really verified. You see in one stray shot, that person's yep. body. And it's never revisited again. It hasn't been yet. But it's just like, they immediately, without any provocation whatsoever, once they get to this village, seem to know that they're in a horror movie setting, and that means somebody has to die. And for no reason, there's like a bear track and one guy goes missing. And they're like, who are we going to kill? And they have yep. this fucking witch hunt within like just a couple episodes where they're just like, determined somebody has to die. And then they have like Lost style smoke monster haunted effigy of your regrets shit going on. You know, it's funny. I don't think intentionally. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are moments where I feel like, oh, is it intentional? Because there will be jokes, but those are just jokes. Like, they're just jokes.
Just bad jokes. And they're jokes at the expense of whoever the loathable character is. The joke is,
yeah.
he's fat, she's a slut, like,
yeah,
that's
she's
the
a
joke.
Bitch. Yeah.
And, and that is funny, but it's only funny because the show sort of expects you to agree with it that these are terrible people and all
well,
this stuff is very hilarious.
Well, so, yeah, so that's what I'm kind of struggling with, because I feel like I won't play the game. I will not play the show's game. I won't revel in judging. I don't revel in the show's cruelty. I don't revel in the way the show is clearly judging all of these people
and how they judge each other. It's meaningless to judge these characters because they're such fake characters. They're such one-note characters that I feel like they're intentionally being framed as devices for the sake of just the tone.
I guess the experience of watching it, though, makes it like I feel like the show's asking me to be like, yeah, don't you hate these fuckers? And you're yeah. like, you know what? I'm just going to enjoy your I'm going to enjoy your entertaining show. Try not to tell me too hard how to react to it. You know, I get that. Obviously, you disagree with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, certainly.
Right.
No, I mean, as I said at the beginning, I compare this to something like Mr. Show, where it's like sort of it seems like it's just sort of an off-kilter, continuous poking of its own genres.
Well, so I think that's a really interesting idea, and I feel like the jury's kind of out. Like, I feel like the ending would tell me what
yeah.
if whether or not that, like, because I don't quite pick up that vibe. What I get is like, oh man, like they're having a lot of fun. This is very indulgent. I think the show does legitimately think that it's shocking and legitimately think that it's funny, not in the way that I think it's funny, though.
Yeah. Well, half and half. It's like some of the stuff that it intends to be funny, as in isn't everybody hateable, is funny. But the some of the stuff that it thinks is genuinely affecting, like I think the character backstories are very obviously meant to be affecting, they're just funny. And so it's half and half. It's like, okay, well, this was
if the horror
movie.
Stuff
okay,
so, and the overt narrative of everything at the village is so ridiculous and the conversations there are like so on the face of them farcical, I just can't expect the backstories to be seen in a different way.
Well, right, but what is that in service of? If that in a satire, that would be in service of saying something about human nature or saying something about the genre itself of horror being.
It's just a pure comedy for its own sake.
Well, yeah, well, Cabin in the Woods is a good example of this. Like, I'm not a big fan of that movie, but Cabin in the Woods is. Characterization is in service of mocking the actual horror genre for people's indulgence of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is not like that. But this is it's trying to have its cake and eat it too. It's trying to make you hate these characters and also be shocked by their deaths still. It's like, okay, it's like a bad Sam Raimi movie. Sam Raimi is like the master of this specific tone that it's shooting for with the Evil Dead movies and like Drag Me to Hell. Like, those are the good versions of that. This is like the Spider-Man 3, where it's like nobody really wanted this treatment of these characters, where it just seems mean-spirited and a little out of touch. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because the show is still tremendously entertaining. It's still completely achieving that so bad it's good feel. I just don't think it's intentionally trying to be so bad it's good. In fact, I think that in and of itself is a pretty impossible task.
But at the same time,
what?
I mean, I can kind of see where Nick's coming from. Where while I'm watching it, there's enough in there to make me think maybe.
Right.
To make me think maybe strongly enough. To where I think it's entirely plausible, because the thing for me is, and here's the thing for me, is that what you're talking about is impossible to do.
Yeah.
What that is the lost skeleton of Kadavra, mm-hmm. which, and I don't know if anyone has seen that except for me.
Birdemic 2.
Birdemic 2, yeah.
Specifically the second one, not
like,
the first.
So bad it's good, never knows that it's so bad it's good. If it does, that means it is automatically not so bad it's good. Does that make sense?
I mean, I can understand that, but I know the point you're making there.
But what I'm saying is that that's the way I normally think.
Yeah,
but seeing it done for the first time. I'm open to that. Like, my mind is open to the possibility that I am seeing it done well for the first time, because if this is intentional, it is done pretty damn well. Like, that's it's impressive. That's an impressive trick.
Like, I think it has been done before. I've used this reference twice now, but I think, like, for instance, the extended Mr. Show sketch where they David Cross and the guy from Better Call Saul, the two main guys of Mr. Show, they basically do an extended riff on a friend visits another friend who's adopted into a new life and upsets everything, but everybody. I'm explaining this poorly.
No, I know this. Dude, I have Mr. Show memorized. I know the sketch.
Okay. You know the sketch. All right. Yes. I think this show is that sketch, like, as a show.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No?
Here's
the question. Here's what I can't wrap my brain around. I've seen a lot of Mario Kata's stuff, and I've seen a lot of this director's stuff. I can't remember his name. But I've seen a lot of both of their work, which is why I think that this is intentionally trying to be shocking. I think it is supposed to be silly, but it's not supposed to be bad. They are trying to make a genuinely shocking horror thing that is sort of also funny. Again, same right, Evil Dead 2. That's what they're trying to make Evil Dead 2. And so I'm wondering, if this is supposed to be bad, for what purpose would the director make something that... What is the purpose of that? What's the point of trying to make something, an intentional B-movie for no reason? Like, what would be the goal?
Because it's funny. There's a reason you normally watch B movies. There is a humor in that.
Yeah, it's also a writing challenge.
Right, but that's not really particularly successful, I guess. I
don't want to question their motives for making the show.
I want to know why they make it. Like, what's the purpose?
There's so much anime is being produced now that it's like, well,
yeah, it's a very unique thing. There's certainly very few shows out there like The Lost Village.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
It's entertaining, so...
I don't know. I feel like I could see it totally both ways. I am definitely going to keep watching it. It is wildly entertaining. And if it does turn out in the end that it was all intentionally written that way, I will be very impressed. I feel like I'll be really, really impressed with that.
I think this is what, like, Mizushima and Okada would do together. I think this. I was, like, wondering how the show would come out when I saw those two names together, because Mizushima is so consistent and Okada is so, like, wildly inconsistent, but in very specific ways. And I think this is where they would align. It's working for me.
All right. Well, I'm glad I got to hash that out with you, because I've been reading your reviews and then I watched the show and I'm like, well, I'm not. I feel like this is a really unique viewpoint, and I can totally kind of see it. I can kind of see it. But I feel like for me, it totally lives or dies on the ending of that show.
Right. Like, you know, mm-hmm. if the ending tries to be sincere, then we'll know, like, oh, this was a mistake of some kind. The ending basically has to pull a cabin in the woods in order for it to fully, like, coalesce as something, you know?
I wouldn't demand that, because, I mean, like, even the things it's aping often have, on the face of it, sincere endings, but that doesn't, like,
well,
make
them
feel...
Well, yeah, I'm not asking for something specific. I'm asking... Yeah. It could end any millions of numbers of ways. I'm asking for a specific tone, regardless of what the events are.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, we'll know by the tone of the ending what they were shooting for, maybe, but...
I'm just not sure how much it'll actually spill its hand, basically.
Yeah, whatever the motives were, it is definitely at least a so bad it's good thing. So if you're like, if you are an avid, like, irony watcher, this is, you know, definitely right up your alley.
Yeah. In and of itself, because it's so fast paced and because it's so crazy and ridiculous, it's just entertaining no matter what. So, yeah.
Yeah, it has at least that going for it.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so let's get to the Twitter questions before we take some questions from the chat. All right, we got a lot of questions. This is kind of a running joke, but maybe some sincere ones, just really wanting to know, Nick, when you're going to review Bleach.
I'm sure it's coming. Just keep asking. One of these days, it's going to have to happen. It's a running joke, because I have a top 30 anime list on my site, and it's pretty high in Google rankings. So inevitably, every person who has just gotten to anime is going to Google best anime, find my list, run it down, see Bleach isn't there, and furiously type, where's Bleach? And that happens basically on a weekly basis.
They just type, where's Bleach?
Where's
Bleach?
They're
doing their, just like Johnny Appleseed. Mm-hmm. Johnny Bleach comment. Travels the internet. Travels the internet asking, where's Bleach?
Yeah.
Okay, I like that. All right. Zinky asks, will the format of Vice and Luna be the same as that of Animated Nina? So, our upcoming webcomic will not be, it will be much bigger, so these will be big pages that you scroll down. These will be large illustrations that you're scrolling down and reading. But there'll be basically, like, graphic novel pages, comic book pages that you read. So bigger than you know, the stories will also be, you know, flowing into each other and stuff like that. So, yeah, a lot of differences from Nina, but many similarities as well. All right, Incompetent Crit asks, what makes for a good shonen series in your eyes? I've seen many different answers to this and want to know what you look for. Jacob, what do you say?
I mean, it kind of depends on the demographic, I guess. Like, shonen is so broad, I don't know specifically what you're referring to. But for me personally, a good, like... So, I can't speak for all audiences or whatever, like, because it's such a broad genre, but for me personally, the more weird a shonen series is, the more I'm kind of latched into it. Like, my personal all-time favorite shonen show to this day is still Yu Yu Hakusho, because it's kind of weird. It decides to change. It's like, oh, it's a spirit detective thing, so he goes on detective adventures. And at some point, Togashi decided maybe that wasn't working, so he just made him, a warrior, and he put him in a tournament setting. And then he decided to subvert the entire role of the spirit detective thing by saying, oh, this is fundamentally a flawed, terrible system to put a child in, and here's why. And then he decided to just make him a demon, and the last part of Yu Yu Hakusho is just demon politics and setting up a demon democracy in the underworld, huh. And it's weird. So, yeah, like, Yu Yu Hakusho is kind of grim and ugly and harsh and bizarre, and made me think that I would really like Hunter x Hunter, and I may give it a go again in the future, but Hunter x Hunter started out to... sporadic for me. I'm sure it finds itself later, but yeah, like, so for me personally, shonen series, it's got to offer something kind of different from the just be yourself and make friends angle. But the be yourself and make friends angle is often forms the bedrock of the most successful ones, so I can't say that that's not good. It's just I look for something a little stranger personally.
I've been told so many times to watch Hunter x Hunter at this point, yeah. That I will.
It's pretty good.
We'll watch it for, yeah, Nick, you're a huge fan, right?
Oh, yeah, it's my favorite shonen.
Yeah, so, I guess that's your answer, right? Like, what makes for a good shonen series, Hunter x Hunter?
Well, Hunter x Hunter is like a million different things, so that's not the most useful answer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is true that I agree with Jacob's answer in that, like, one of the main things I like about Hunter x Hunter is that it's very willing to just jump around into different genres. It starts out of, like, training arc competition thing. It moves into a straight tournament. It jumps from there to, like, a crime thriller for a while, then eventually jumps into an epic war drama for, like, its last third. And it actually nails all those tones. But I guess fundamentally what I think makes shonens fun for me. Also, as Jacob said, it'd be like people want different things in shonens to the point where they want contradictory things. But me personally, I want a strong character focus at the core of it, a setup of powers or dangers or whatever, where there's actually some kind of tactical interest in what's going on. Like it doesn't feel like people are just charging up. It feels like there's some sort of mental game or strategical game going on, and some sort of emotional sincerity at the heart of it. And if you've got those things, I'm probably on board.
Cool. Yeah, that's a pretty good list. I feel like the best shonen I've ever seen was Naruto up to the fucking whatever exam. Which one was the one with the Chunin exam?
Maybe.
Is that the Chunin exam?
I think maybe.
Chunibyo exam.
The Chunin exam is getting into Naruto.
You got 100%.
I passed on the Chunin exam.
You got an A+ on the Chunin exam. Yeah, that stuff was that's the most I've ever been entertained by a shonen series. That and like Rurouni Kenshin Kyoto arc, which is like the most generic answer in the world. But I feel like shonen comes along when you need it and you're in the mood for a certain thing, and there's probably going to be the thing that you're in the mood for. Like there's one for every need almost.
Right.
So like watching 200 episodes of something is something you do. I feel like when you, I don't know that it feels like
it comes
a personal
to you in your
choice.
Darkest hour.
Well, not a darkest hour, but that feels like such a personal choice. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know what? I watched 300 episodes of Prince of Tennis. Okay, man, how was it?
And you're probably only gonna attach to one
of those
because they're so long.
And in your life, one or two of them.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be really into Dragon Ball, but you never got into Naruto, and you never will.
Right.
Because you're past the age when you would get really into that, or you're not looking for a giant long-running show right now, or you're not really in the mood for shonen. And, like, the idea of picking up, like, I'm going to watch episode one of whatever one of these shows is, that's such a huge, like...
One Piece.
When you finish episode one of One Piece, you must feel like a huge asshole.
Yeah.
Like,
oh. Like, there's no way, like,
I got 20 episodes in when I tried it and didn't feel like I'd started it.
Yeah, well, you haven't.
I got. Yeah, I got
you're no. not even like 0.1% of the way through it.
I got 50 episodes into One Piece and Chopper hadn't shown up, and I was like, holy shit. And I skipped ahead to where Chopper was and watched that, and I was like, okay, so I've seen 50 episodes plus the part where Chopper joins, and that's it.
Yeah. I feel like One Piece is a show that I should have been watching weekly the entire time.
One Piece is a show I'm happy to read. Like, I'll read the manga.
The manga's and in general, universally through all of this stuff, the manga's generally always better.
And just faster.
And I can get through it much quicker, too. I don't got to sit there and watch 23 minutes of Luffy struggling to pick something up.
Next week,
he picks it up. Does he pick it up? Nah, fuck. Is he going to pick it up this week? 4 weeks later, is he picking it up this week? He finally picks
it
up.
That was last week.
Yeah.
In any episode, he'll throw it.
Now he's going to throw it.
Is he going to miss?
Yeah, totally. One Piece is really good, though. Somebody in the chat mentioned Nami's arc, and that was what got me, too. That was really good. I kept watching for a while after that, but eventually fell off. All it takes is, like, the wrong filler arc, and I'm derailed. That's all it takes. Okay, let's get on to the next question. AbZero Now asks, if you were in charge of designing a policy to make conventions safer, what steps would you take?
God.
All right. So this is in reference to the recently announced SPJA's policy at Anime Expo, where they are requiring background checks for the entire attending industry. So that means everyone, all volunteers, press, anyone who works at the artist alley, guests of honor, everyone professional that goes to the show has to have a background check done. This is an evolving situation that I have been in conversation with about involved people all week. You're hearing this on Friday. I think by the time you hear this or soon around there will be something coming out about it. But we're still waiting to hear. So I'm waiting on interview questions. I've got a whole lot of stuff out there out in the wild. We'll see what happens. But it's a sensitive situation. So I would say I am firmly on the side of that policy is dumb security theater that does nothing for anyone except make it possible for Anime Expo to buy insurance for an event like that. That's what that does. It's bullshit, I think. And I hope they don't do it. I hope they don't go through with it. That's how I feel. Jacob, do you have a position on that?
I think you covered it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nick, anything? No? All right.
I agree with you.
Okay, Polkadot S asks, favorite shows of the year so far? I draw a blank and try and think of the things I have watched this year so far.
I guess, so it's hard to choose between favorite and best, but I guess the best would easily be Rakugo and Concrete Revolution. I think those are just like easy top two for me so far.
Yeah, I feel like I need to watch Concrete Revolution.
It's really quite a show.
Yeah, I keep being told that.
What about you? My favorite shows of the year so far are, JoJo's is back, so that's great. Rakugo Shinju. Rakugo Shinju is number one, and I would, if I thought about it, I would come up with number twos and threes. But it's spring, so it's still really early. But, like, mm-hmm. of the winter, if you don't count Lupin the Third, which started in fall of last year, it's Lupin the Third and Rakugo Shinju, so, yeah.
Boy, I guess Lupin. That's like kind of an easy answer for me. Also a cop out.
You haven't seen the whole thing.
No, I have not.
From this season, I'd probably also add, like, these might make my top 10 of the year. JoJo as well, and The Lost Village. I'm just enjoying it that much. It's nice. Up there for me.
I like that.
Pretty wacky.
Okay. Stern if Funken asks, there was a question on the ANN survey about the possibility of other ANN podcasts. What's the story behind that? Well, the story behind that is that we throw all kinds of shit in that survey and see if anybody's interested. And occasionally Chris throws in, would you like more podcasts? And the answer is usually like kind of split. We are not making more podcasts. Yeah. I have to take this to chat show format. in order to keep doing it. So, anyway, let's see here. All right, Branko Bergson wants to know the question everyone always wants to know. So, how does this season compare to the previous couple seasons? Nick, what do you think?
For me, this is the best season since this season last year, actually. I'd say it's probably above average season in general, but like last season I basically just had Rakugo. The season before that I had Monogatari. The season before that I had Gatchaman Crowds. The season before that I had a few shows at once. This season I've got like half a dozen shows I'm watching that's like, and I'm happy with. I've cut off everything that I'm feeling, you know, mediocre about. That makes it a shining season for me. Couldn't be happier about this one.
Awesome.
Yeah, I would same with Nick's answer, except for instead of last spring, which I was terminally bored by. Like, it wasn't even full of crap. That would be this winter. That was full of crap. But last spring was full of things that I just happened to bore me, I guess. It wasn't even bad things. It was just, like, things that are very iyashike and, like, calming or, like, gentle dramas. And I was like, I'm so bored. But for me, it would be last winter of 2015 is the last time things were this good. But, like, yeah, this season is full of really entertaining, like, stuff for a bunch of different genres and audiences that I hope will sell well. And yeah, it's packed with things. Like, even things that I don't like Bungo Stray Dogs. I was kind of hoping to like that. And then Bungo Stray Dogs is not good. I don't like it pretty much at all. But it's probably guaranteed to sell pretty well, so, like, that's good. You know, and so, yeah, like, even if I'm not crazy about something, like, if it looks like it's going to pump more money back into the industry, that's great. But, yeah, so this is a really good season of anime. There's lots to pick from, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching stuff. So that's, that's good. Like, usually that means there's something. Like, Winter 2015, which everyone loved, I watched a bunch of stuff that season. Like, and I think that spring was pretty good, too.
Winter 2015 wasn't a good commercial year, though. Excuse me, it wasn't a good commercial season. It was just a good, like, do you like arty weird shit? Like, it was great for that, but it wasn't good
commercial. Yeah, we had Yurikuma, Death Parade, Maria the Virgin Witch all at the same time.
Yeah, it's a lot of, and Shira, and the last half of Shirobako and the last half of Your Life.
Oh,
April,
yeah.
All at once. So it was like, yep, we were overloaded with stuff that the critics love, but it was a bad time commercially. This spring is more like things critics love and good commercial time. So I think that's good.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it seems like good stuff, and I hope My Hero Academia is doing as well as it needs to. I mean, hopefully exceeding that. that like we do need hits. Mm-hmm. Like, we do need big hits. So, mm-hmm, like, I feel like even if you're not super into the show, I root for the success of things like My Hero Academia, and I don't feel like that compromises me as a, you know, opinion haver.
Well, yeah, we want the industry to continue to exist. I don't think that's too much of a bad bias to have.
Yeah,
I am biased in favor of the industry that puts food on my table continuing to exist. So that doesn't mean I'm going to give My Hero Academia an A+ and tell you to watch it. But that does mean I'm going to be like, boy, I sure hope people are watching and enjoying that.
Yeah, I mean, it's too early to say like what's doing really, really well in the West. Like, hopefully My Hero Academia. But in Japan, the big winners this season seem to be Cabinary, Haven't You Heard I'm Sakamoto, and that ReZero thing. So Haven't You Heard I'm Sakamoto for the ladies, ReZero for the boys, and Cabinary for the sort of general audience seems to be what's going on.
ReZero... I feel like just a series of nope gifs pop into my head if I think about ReZero.
I'm watching it and it's really bad, but I understand why it is successful with the otaku market. It's not good, but I get it. I understand.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on here. Anime Wondering asks, top tips for achieving a healthy balance when it comes to anime consumption, not getting too addicted, Jacob.
Don't watch anything that you're not, like, enjoying in some way. And it doesn't have to be, like, find what about watching anime gives you satisfaction, whether that's the communal aspect, whether that's, analyzing it, whether that's just relaxing after work, like, and stick to that, and don't ever feel like you're obligated to watch something for the communal aspect, or because you identify as a fan, or whatever, like, just watch what speaks to you, and don't push yourself beyond that, and you hopefully won't burn out. You know, take if there's nothing in a season that interests you, just don't watch anime. You'll be out of touch with the community for a season. It's not a big deal, you know. So, yeah.
I think that's all good advice. Not watching stuff that like watching stuff that you don't like just to follow along with the community does seem like that I've observed this now at this point. That is the fastest burnout. That's the fastest way to burn out. Is just watching stuff because your friends are watching it, not because you actually really like it. Nick, what do you think?
I agree with all of that, though I wouldn't like entirely downplay the communal aspect of it.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
There's a reasonable enjoyment to be gotten out of watching things as a group together.
Of course, just not like 10 things.
Yeah, oh, for sure, definitely. I don't really have this problem that much because I have to like motivate myself to watch anime more than to like not watch 15 episodes of something. I'm very bad at marathoning things.
Really?
I always have been, yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I haven't done it in a long time, I feel like.
I'm bad at marathoning things, too. I prefer... like
well,
I used
actually,
to
no. Well, when I answered that question, I marathon anime all the damn time. I do it for this show. For whatever reason, I really like to watch anime marathoned. I haven't marathoned anything else in a long time. Like, not anime.
Not anime.
But anime, I really like to watch it in big chunks.
Yeah, no, I know. You and I are the opposites in that regard.
Right.
Because that's how I ingested... because I bought it. That was how I ingested anime for years. But now I'm finding I really prefer watching stuff week to week. Unless it is like a Yuri Kumo where it's just like, put it all in my face so I can think about it later. But even then, like, yeah, it's probably best that it took me 12 weeks to fully digest a Yuri Kumo or Arashi or whatever the case may be. But like, I'm infinitely more comfortable with the simulcasting stuff than I am the way I watched anime for years and first got into it, which was just 10 episodes in a day or whatever, which is... I now look at that and I'm like, oh no, I can't do that. I would rather just little chunks of different stuff throughout the week.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Divine Nega asks, thoughts on Sunrise finally getting a new Gundam on TV in the US? Cool. Good for them.
Thumbs up.
Great. I mean, it sounds like, ugh. No, it's good. Good. Cool. Awesome. Good for them. All right, Scotty415 asks, any interest in the Warcraft or Assassin's Creed movies? Will this be the year we finally get a good video game movie?
Nope.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, like, I trust some of the people behind the Warcraft movie. The trailers look really generic, but I trust some of the staff behind it, so, you know, maybe.
That Assassin's Creed movie sure does look like an Assassin's Creed movie. And thus, I am not interested in it because I feel like that imagery bounces off of my eyeballs. Like, I can't see it anymore. They've abused the Assassin's Creed guy in a hood with knives in his hands so much that it may as well not exist. Like, I can't see it anywhere.
Like, even beyond that, the thing about Assassin's Creed story is Assassin's Creed story is really stupid. Like, if it were just a guy in a hood in the Middle Ages or whatnot assassinating people, that'd be great. But it's like you're using a techno headset to go into your ancestors' genes, which are somehow in your body, that you can access their memories to actually affect the future in some way. And so the movie's going to have to explain this. This is going to have to be like 20 minutes of the movie. And I don't think any movie that has that 20 minutes can be a very good movie.
I mean, more than... Let's say that they spent a lot of money on this movie and it's 2 hours and 20 minutes. Oh, can you even imagine sitting through a 2-hour and 20-minute Assassin's... I can't play Assassin's Creed for 2 hours at a time. And I liked those games. Like, I liked those games for a while, and they were fun, but oh my god.
Ugh.
Jeez. I think Warcraft has a chance at being okay. I think it has a shot at being okay. Duncan Jones, man, he's alright.
That's what I was thinking.
The trailer seemed really iffy to me. I guess if the staff is good, that's something.
Yeah, I'm not basing my optimism on the trailer, really. Like, it looked... Okay, right. So the Warcraft trailer was one that I saw... that looked better in, like, crystal clear laser projection 3D, and it looked like shit in a regular 3D theater. I noticed that. Like, the fidelity really mattered. Mm-hmm. Like, it looked way better on a nicer screen. So, otherwise it just kind of looks like blurry-ass CG. Yeah.
CG. Yeah.
Via 011 asks... Oh, god damn it. This is the Bleach thing again. No, wait, here we go. Also, what's the viability of visual novel reviews on the site, and would any of you do it? Okay. I wouldn't ask... Okay, so visual novel reviews are something we have thought about a lot. The problem with them is that you are requiring someone to read a visual novel to write the review. Like...
And they're huge?
They're huge. I cannot afford to pay someone an hourly wage to read a visual novel and then pay them for that review. Like, that's just... So what I can do is, like, first impressions, I can do, you know, a column recommending visual novels, we could do a feature on visual novels, but standard video game-style reviews of visual novels, I think that's content that an outlet like us would have to, well, we would have to spend money on it, and there's no way it's going to make money for us, I'll tell you that right now. So that is the thing I would not probably send up the chain. But first impressions and somebody who's writing about visual novels who has a tremendous amount of experience with them, that is something I absolutely would do. Final Fury K asks, any hopes for the new Mystery Science Theater 3000? Well, gosh, I'm conflicted about the new Mystery Science Theater. How do you feel about it, Nick?
Well, I only watched a few movies of the previous one, and I enjoyed them, but I have, like... literally dozens, maybe hundreds of the original ones to go through before I'd ever have to think about any watching any remakes of it. So my hands are clean here. I don't have to think about it.
Jacob, you don't give a shit.
I've seen Mystery Science Theater stuff and Riff Tracks that are funny, but I don't have that deep nostalgic tie to it that a lot of people have, like Zach.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't want to be a sour puss. About new Mystery Science Theater, man. I don't want to be a sourpuss
negative
about
Nelly.
It. But then they brought in Ernie Cline. Ernie Cline, the man who wrote Ready Player One and Armada. I can't abide Ernie Cline.
Oh my god, really?
I can't abide Ernie Cline. That's no. He's gonna write jokes for you? What are you doing to me? Like, I felt betrayed. There's other people involved in that I was like, I don't know. I backed out of the Kickstarter, and it's a wait. I'm gonna watch their first episode. I will keep an open mind. I love the guy they got to play Tom Servo. I love Jonah Ray. There's a lot of good talent on that show. I've just obviously have thought about it a lot, and let's move on to another question.
Ernie Cline is like the light novel author of the West.
Ernie Cline. Yeah. If you've seen that Game On or Game Over documentary about the Atari 2600 cartridges with the landfill out in Mill in New Mexico, he's in that a lot.
No, I haven't.
Just watch that if you want to know why I find Ernie Cline kind of annoying. Like, I'm sure he's a nice guy. Okay, I'm going to stop bagging on Ernie Cline now. Okay. Angel XL3 asks, are anime shows starring a large female cast aimed at females a rarity nowadays, excluding children's shows like Precure and idol shows?
Yeah. They were always a rarity.
Well, didn't they find out that girls will watch the idol stuff?
Well, yeah, girls watch the idol stuff, but so that has become, like, mass nerd market, sometimes little girl. Like, it depends on, some idol shows don't work because they don't work for, like, the little girl market, so you gotta trip a fine line there. But as far as aiming your show exclusively at female audiences, they've cut the women out more and more. Like, the old standby was, like, harem and otome, reverse harem, I should say, and otome and stuff like that, where you would have like two female characters, and now they're like, oh no, Fujoshi don't want women in the show. Much like the reverse, like they learned this from the otaku counterparts, where you have shows with all high school girls casts, like the K-On and that kind of thing. The K-On. But you know, they learned that, like, it's like, oh, Fujoshi are the same. Like, they just want a cast of hot boys who hang out together and make jokes, and here you go. Like, so yeah, over time, the Japan is more gender essentialist in their marketing than America is by a lot. And the stuff that is aimed exclusively at women has now become all about cute boys, and the stuff that is aimed exclusively at men has all become all about cute girls, and that's just the way it is for nerd culture in Japan right now. So, yeah.
Jordan TX asks, what movies have you seen this year that you like? plenty. The ones that immediately pop into my head would be The Witch was really good. Deadpool.
Yeah, I really like that one.
I like Deadpool a lot.
Jungle Book was good.
Jungle Book was good. Zootopia was really good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Everybody Wants Some, which is the new Richard Linklater movie. It's good. Not a lot to it, but you'll enjoy it if you like Dazed and Confused. What else did I see? A lot of stuff, but I feel like a lot of it.
I liked 10 Cloverfield Lane.
See, I didn't, so that's worth seeing.
Yeah, I would say so, for sure.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, Hardcore Henry.
It's very, very, very different from the first one, and what's his name? John Goodman. It's just a fantastic performance.
That's
all
what
three
I
of the main actors do great performances. So
it just screamed rental to me, so I was like, I'm going to rent that.
It seems like it's almost designed as a classic kind of thriller rental. Like, it has that atmosphere to it, but I think you'll really enjoy it if you check it out.
Cool, all right.
And as always, the classic, Gods of Egypt.
Gods of Egypt. Jeez, man. Somebody brought up Hardcore Henry. I can't recommend that to the audience that listens to this podcast enough. Hardcore Henry is anime as fuck, and you should see it if you like action anime and were kind of a dirtbag in your life at all. You should watch Hardcore Henry. It's your kind of movie. I liked it a lot. It's a lot of fun. Let's see here. Jordan TX, Nick, I think this question is for you. What is your favorite thing about One Piece so far?
I mean, there's a lot of stuff I like about it. I think what I'm most enjoying in my experience of it is that I feel like Oda is sort of growing as an artist across the early volumes of it, and it's really, really satisfying to see that happen. It's satisfying to see his like storytelling get more complex, nuanced, his character writing get better, his jokes gain better timing, his artwork become more full, more his like understanding of perspective and negative space become better over time. Like it's. I think it's a very critic answer, but it is really satisfying as a critic to be able to talk about all this stuff as it just sort of blooms, as he becomes the manga artist that clearly made him such a sensation.
Carlos59 asks, what genre do you have trouble getting into? Well, previously for me, I guess it was the Ashike, but I'm kind of coming around, like, somewhat on it. Oh, man, Boston sees himself. I'm kind of coming around on it a little bit. I would argue, like, long-running shonen, obviously, we discussed why. Magic High School harem. Yeah, can't do it. Jacob?
Yeah, the light novel high school whatever shows just crypt. I mean, I feel like so many of the fundamentals of those shows are based in literally just being the fundamentals of those shows. Like, here is this character type you like. Here is this guy tripping over a girl in the way that you like.
Right.
Here is this conversation that you like. And just, like, much of what I like in shows is, like, I don't expect shows to really surprise me as far as storytelling goes. Most of the time, I know how plots work. There are only so many plots in the world. But it's like how you add texture to them. And I feel like light novel, high school, harem shows intentionally, like, peel back texture.
Right. Makes sense. Jacob?
So genre wise, I like to say that I'm open to any genre in anime, but I guess, I mean, the hardest to win me over. So there was a season, there was a show this season. It was basically this, I said in the preview guide, this is basically the same thing as Tanaka-kun, which is to say it's unassuming, but animated very nicely, you know, gentle comedy. It's a cute girls doing cute things, and I feel like when people mention that, they're like sort of a couple years out of date back when, like, Moe was going to destroy the anime industry, and that's not how it's thought of now, so it feels kind of out of date to just say cute girls doing cute things. But, I mean, it's still, that stuff is still made now, and this show, which is, I think, called Three Leaves, Three Colors or something.
I remember that.
Yeah, Three Leaves, Three Colors, and it is perfectly fine, and probably on the level of, like, a Tanaka-kun sort of thing, but because it is just three, like, plastic girls destined to appear on a Dakimakura talking about food and fun, like, you gotta have more than that. Like, that is, as a genre, it's a box of Frosted Flakes. Like, I don't, you know, like, I can't, you know, you could be the best version of that in the world, say, like, K-On! Or whatever, and it's still like, yeah, I can't get into that. Like, I'm watching a thing for the purposes of selling cute girls to otaku. That's it. I'm going to watch that for 26 episodes.
Right.
So, you know, it's like, so it's kind of hard to get into, even when it's, like, a good version of itself. I would say that even to Love Live. Like, Love Live has spoken way more to a broader audience, obviously, than a lot of that stuff has. But I'm still getting sort of an artificial high school girls as product thing, and it's like, you know, it's the same reason I'm, and weirdly, they're very different, but it's the same reason that I'm bored with, like, Marvel movies. It's like, okay, I'm being sold this thing for the millionth time, I'm bored of it, you know, I've been sold this exact product so many times that, what is the point in another one, you know, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I think I feel you on that. I think I feel, might feel the same way. Nick, you kind of went into this a little bit, but was there anything else?
I mean, I feel like almost any other genre, there's stuff I can enjoy in it. Like, I used to be pretty against or just not interested in either the Ashike or cute girls doing cute things shows, but I think, like, if you get more into them. There's clearly craft there. There's things that those shows can be good at. There's ways those shows distinguish themselves, and ways you can invest in them in an emotional sense, based on, like, what the show is actually trying to do. So I found something to definitely enjoy there over time. And any other genre, I mean, I like action shows aren't really my thing, but there are some action shows I'll like if they're good at certain things. So I'd say I'm pretty open aside from that.
Okay, before we get to the chat, let's take one last Twitter question here. Is there any Mind Half Full asks, is there any show where you didn't like the story but stuck with it purely because of technical or aesthetic merits? I don't think I've ever watched something all the way through just because it looked great. I've watched a movie all the way through just because it looked great, but not a show. Jacob?
Yeah, not if I actively disliked the story, unless I was watching it for, like, a podcast or something, I don't know, something like that, but, no, if the story's kind of like Grimgar from last season was like that, where the story is very but the production values really keep you locked in, like, it's just a very well-directed show. But not if I actively dislike the story, no, then that's too much. Like, you can't make it pretty enough if I actively dislike it. Unless it goes so far that it's into, like, hate-watch territory, but that's a different story. Then you're watching it ironically. You're still getting enjoyment. If I'm not into it because I'm bored or because I think the story's really badly written and it's not fun, then yeah, no matter how pretty it is, like, I can't stay locked into it. So,
One Punch Man, definitely. Like, the fight scenes were just so gorgeously animated. I had to keep up with it for that.
Right. And famously, you did not like most of the rest of that show.
Yeah, the story kind of repelled me.
So. Right, yeah. Okay, so do we have any questions from the chat? Jacob, an anonymous person wants to know how you feel about the end of Assassination Classroom.
It's better than the first three quarters. they got to a point. It was basically when they unveil Koro Sensei's backstory.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, this was the point of the show. And everything else is sort of wasting your time to get to the point of the show. It's S-Class is pretty it's pretty rote shonen. Like, it is, which is weird because it's not cliche. S-Class's problems are not... S-Class's problems aren't the typical this-has-no-flavor-cliché-shonen thing. Like, Twin Star Exorcist, like, that's a cliché shonen show. S-Class is not cliché, it's just its problems lie in other weird places. Like, every time it tries for depth, it fails. Like, every time it tries for depth, it fails on it. It falls on its face completely. And but it's not weird enough to just be weird, crazy cynicism. Like, it's still trying for that everybody's friends and we learned about the power of friendship thing. So it just has severe tone problems. But the last quarter, where it's like, okay, what do you actually do? The story's over. This is the last month. Do we kill this guy or save him? Is compelling. So yeah, it's like, oh, this is the most compelling the show has ever been. But still, it's kind of I should have stopped watching it at the beginning. But it had so much more promise at the beginning because the premise is so good. But it's like, oh, this guy came up with a great premise and just isn't a very good writer. So it was kind of a bummer.
Yeah, the first episode of that felt like first two episodes of that I think felt 100%. Wrote as hell. Like, cool concept, but the shonen cliches were just right up front. Power of friendship. And yeah. I just... nope.
it kept trying to do that. You can do power of friendship. Like, that's what My Hero Academia is doing, stuff like that. But this was, like, not really sincerely invested in power of friendship. It's very mean-spirited, weirdly. Like, it tries to go for... The guy who wrote it, I believe, is the guy who did that Noragami Neuro thing that was real big with the Black Butler girls back in the day. Which is a, like, sort of... It, like Black Butler, it's this mean-spirited, like, hot guy devil who will, like, be your perfect guy and then slice you into pieces sort of thing. So he has, like, a sort of a weird, wicked sense of humor, but it doesn't really translate well into that kind of sincerity that you need for a Shonen Jump.
Right. okay. Poop asks, thoughts on Netflix holding shows like Kurumukuro until they're finished before releasing them? Think they're not capable of doing a weekly release or just being stubborn about it? Of course they're capable of doing a weekly release. I mean, they have a weekly show that airs three times a week now. It just started this week, so they could have done that at any time, I think. I mean, Netflix does what Netflix wants. They can make it so that that show is not seen by anyone until the end of the season or whatever, and I don't think it actually impacts the profitability of that show. I don't think it changes anyone for anything except us, the consumer. We have to wait until they're finished dubbing it or whatever. If that's a huge problem for you, sure. It's not for me, though. I guess I can empathize with people who really want to see every single thing in a season, but one or two things being held back is just not a big deal to me.
Yeah, if it was half the season, I'd be more concerned. But it's like, oh, this is the PA Works mech show. Okay, it'll eventually come out.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Nick?
I mean, pretty much the same. Like, if Netflix decides to consume half the season, which they probably have which they easily have the pockets to do, it'd be a real problem. But for now, it's just one show. So,
a lot of people asking what the hell's going on with Kiznaiver, and whether or not it's good hate watch material. But you don't. That's not how you see it at all, right?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I'm just enjoying it. Like, right. it's uneven. There's like sequences where there'll be like a really like just crass mean joke or whatnot, or a sequence of too on the nose writing, but there's also plenty of like legitimately subtle and like multi-layered conversations between the characters that actually like respects their interiority in a variety of ways that I don't see with many shows. And given that there's no show this season that's like My Teen Romantic Comedy Snafu or Euphonium, one of the shows basically exactly hits my like a low-key internal character drama wheelhouse that is like my exact favorite kind of show. Kiznaiver is like the closest approximation in this season, and it's also gorgeous because the director, who's one of Trigger's sort of rising stars, he did some of the best episodes of Kill la Kill. This is his first full show, and he's just killing it. Like, it's just beautiful to watch. The character designs are great, the layouts are great, the color design is great, and that combined with the unsteady but sort of very emotion heavy and occasionally very nuanced character writing means it's a show I'm definitely enjoying.
Speaking of somebody who is hate-watching Kiznaiver, no, it is not a good hate-watch. Your good hate-watches, you can't call them irony-watches. Your good irony-watches this season are Big Order and Lost Village. Kiznaiver, I'm watching even though I actively don't like it because I'm interested to see where it goes. I'm interested because of the stated theme of the show, which is that, like, sort of the weirdos of the world are the ones who need to empathize with each other the most, even though they might not want to. And that is a good theme, and I am continually floored by how bad Mario Kata is at writing, like, characters who are weird and need empathy. Like, she's just very judgmental. Like, oh man, as a writer, she's so mean. Like, she's so judgmental. So I'm just mostly interested to see where she takes those characters, but it is unpleasant. Like, it's not fun. When you think of irony watching, when you think hate watching, you think something fun that's like The Lost Village or Big Order. This is unpleasant. It is hard to sit through sometimes. It's kind of makes your stomach go, so at least from my perspective, like, again, you may have a completely different perspective on it. You may enjoy it. But for me, the entire problem is just that Mari Okada is writing a story about empathy where she just clearly doesn't like a lot of these people, where she's like, he's fat, he's a masochist. She's also very, like, she has really, really weird ideas about gender and sexuality, like, really, really weird ideas. So I just, ugh. It's kind of gross. It's kind of hard to watch. But, yeah, it's interesting. It's not bland. It's very unique and is trying to say some things. So that's interesting.
I only saw the first episode and thought it looked great, but it was heading into edgelord territory, and so I wasn't interested. Yeah. Also, it seemed like it was going to, like, let me put it to you this way. I started, that show was clearly going to be about empathy. The execution of it made it clear to me that, I will be interested in someone's summary of what this is going to say about empathy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go along for the ride.
I'll be your canary in the
coal mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put me in the coal mine, Chief. I'll do it.
A few folks are asking about Voltron, which Netflix has a new Voltron coming up, which has the Avatar people involved, right? Am I wrong about this?
I haven't looked at the staff, but screenshots from the show certainly seem to indicate it's the same art team, at the very least.
Yeah, I should look up more of that so I actually know what the hell I'm talking about. Legend of Korra people, the chat tells me. So we were contacted by Netflix, and we'll have a review of that June 6th. I asked Mike to review it, so he's going to take a look. He's a big Voltron guy.
Oh,
so,
it's Korra people, sans Mike and Brian. So it's everybody but the directors and writers of Korra.
Oh, okay.
So it's all the art people, but not Mike and Brian.
Well, we'll see. It looks fun to me. I certainly liked what I saw, just visually. It looked cool. I'm curious to see that pilot episode, and yeah, we'll have a review, so we'll find out. I think it looks kind of neat. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like their suits. I like their character designs. It looks good.
Someone mentioned Overwatch, which I'm very excited for.
I am also excited about Overwatch.
Mm.
I played a little bit of the beta, thought it was a lot of fun. I haven't enjoyed a shooter like that in quite a while, and I didn't really play much Team Fortress 2, so this still feels like, oh, I haven't really played a game like this.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. Like, it looked great, too. Like, yeah.
Yeah, really great design, really, like, sticky, just character. The way everyone plays out just feels very satisfying to the archetype they represent. It's just, it's true. I rarely feel that, like, compulsion to play a game when I'm not actively playing a game anymore. It's like something I used to have a lot in my teens, and Overwatch brought that back, which is a good feeling.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. I was a little, like, I didn't quite get as into Dark Souls 3 as I thought I would. I don't know. I guess I just wasn't quite in the mood for it or something, but what I played of Overwatch was like, oh, this is what I'm in the mood for right now. So, yeah. Thankfully. Let's see here. Do we have anything else from the chat? No, Wes Anime asks, which conventions will Anon show up for this year? Are they still fun even with work asks? Yeah, of course conventions are fun. I still enjoy. I was burned out on them for a little bit there, but, you know, I only really go to one or two now, so they're just fun. It's work. It's a lot of work, especially Anime Expo is a bitch because it happens on the same weekend as Preview Guide. But I'm really looking forward to this year's show. I, in spite of all the drama, I always really look forward to Anime Expo. Jacob?
Yeah, I mean, I love going to cons, so, AX is always a good experience. The scuttlebutt around it has been dispiriting, but,
yeah,
I'm still excited.
We'll see how it goes.
So, you know, the con itself hopefully is still good.
Nick, you go to Anime Boston, right?
Yep, that's just the one I go to. I enjoy it every year.
Are you considering? Are you considering branching out and going to another one?
No. Like I even with Anime Boston, I go like a day or two of it and feel like wiped out after a couple hours hanging around, checking an event or two, and going to the con floor. I don't think I have the sort of temperament for cons. They just sort of wipe me out, physically, emotionally. It's just too much. That's, so I'm happy with Anime Boston and I have a good time.
That's understandable. Yeah. Trudging around AX is. you know, it's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but in terms of which ones we will show up to, we have panels at AX, and so far as I know, we have panels at Otakon. We probably might have a panel at New York Comic Con. We are not sending anyone except some freelancers to San Diego Comic Con anymore, but yeah, otherwise, you know, you'll see pretty much the same. You know, convention coverage in and of itself is changing. So we'll see how it goes for in the coming years. But I still love going, and I hope I get to do what we wanted to do a couple this year. I Otakon is like a maybe, like we have like a 40-30% chance of getting to go, I think. But I'm kind of holding out hope that we get to go. Okay, I think that actually wraps us up for now. Nick, I can't thank you enough for coming on and indulging me. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I enjoy it.
All right.
Always enjoy coming on.
Well, thanks a lot, Nick. All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Nick for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating or review. We really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.